Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Mahabharata character series. We discussed that traumatic event while talking about life of Yudhishthir, how the Pandavas in a gambling match lost everything and were exiled. The citizens, led by the Brahmins, assembled around the Pandavas and said that the king is so vicious that he allowed this unfair gambling match and he stripped the your virtuous Pandavas of all your righteous wealth. If we stay in the association of such a king, then we will be contaminated by sin. Instead, if we associate with you, then we will also become virtuous. O Pandavas, we will also come with you to the forest. Yudhishthir folded his hands and he said humbly, "It is our fortune that all of you people led by the Brahmanas ascribe to us the qualities that we don't have." The king, Bhishma, Vidura, our mother Kunti, they're all present in Hastinapur and they are the object of your service. By serving them, you'll please me the most. Please go back to the kingdom. Citizens wailed and they returned back. As they were returning, Dhritarashtra was in anxiety and he asked his messengers, how were the Pandavas departing from the village, from the city? And he described curiously, a very curious thing. He said that Yudhishthir would almost covered his eyes with a cloth. Bhima was beating his arms. Arjuna was scattering grass with his grass around with his hands and legs. Sahadev had covered his body with cloth and Nakula had covered his body with ashes. Bhrigu was chanting fearful looking mantras, sounding mantras related with Yamaraj from Samveda, and Draupadi was walking with her hair disheveled on the streets with tears streaming down her eyes. Intrigued by this description, Dhritarashtra asked the reason. He said, Yudhishthir, although he had been cheated, provoked and insulted, he had not spoken one word of anger. The anger that was burning within his heart, he did not want it to consume innocent people upon whom his furious glance may fall. That is why he had covered his eyes. Bhima was thinking about how circumstances had not allowed him to use his glorious arms, formidable enough to destroy even the greatest of enemies, and he was longing for a time when he could do deeds worthy of those acts. Arjuna was thinking of how he would scatter arrows in all directions the way he was scattering grass now against all their enemies and destroy them. Sahadev was thinking that in this moment of mortification, no one should see them. Nakula was being incomparably beautiful, and now, because he was not wearing any upper cloth, having shown the upper cloth as they had been told to by Karana in the assembly, because now they were no longer kings, he had covered his body so that women would not become attracted to him. Dhaumya Rishi was chanting the mantras related with death, meditating on how the Brahmins of the Kauravas would chant these mantras when the Kauravas would be killed in battle. And Draupadi was contemplating how, on the same road that she was walking away from the city, years later, when those who had insulted her, their wives would also walk along the same road back towards the city after their husbands and lords had been killed in battle by her virtuous husbands, especially Bhima. Dhritarashtra was panic-struck by hearing this. At that time, Narad Muni suddenly appeared and said that after 13 years, there will be a terrible war in which all the Kauravas will be destroyed. Dhritarashtra's heart sank. He knew that Narada's words would surely come true. And he felt regret at what had happened, what he had allowed to happen, and what would now happen to his children. He felt not much remorse for the suffering that the Pandavas were going through, but more for what he would suffer when his sons had to bear the consequences. The Pandavas went to the forest. They came to Kamyaka, Kamyavan, and they were there in that forest. At that time, Krishna and Balaram came over there. And when they saw the Pandavas in ascetic garb, both of them were angry. Balaram said, and he had heard about the gambling match, and he'd immediately come there. And he said, those wretched Kauravas, they deserve death for the way they have dishonored Draupadi. Krishna said that the world cannot withstand my anger, and I will destroy the Kauravas for the way they have dishonored all of you virtuous Pandavas and the chaste Draupadi. And as Krishna spoke with great fury, it seemed as if he would destroy the whole world. The Lord cannot tolerate sufferings that come upon his devotees. And Arjuna at that time started pacifying the Lord. He said, O Krishna, O Keshava, O Madhava, O Vasudeva, the great sages have told me that you are the Supreme Lord Narayan, that you have incarnated many times and have delivered the world from many dangers. You are supreme, you are omnipotent, you are all merciful. O Lord, do not let your anger become the cause of the destruction of the world. And Arjuna in this way offered prayers to Krishna. Arjuna and Krishna normally had Sakhyarasa. They had friendly relationships. They treated themselves as equals. But there are times when Krishna manifests emotions or actions different from that friendly rasa, and then Arjuna reciprocates. So, normally, Arjuna and Krishna, both of them, they are devotees. They are friends. But God is the Supreme Lord. How can he be the friend of anyone? But actually, the concept of Leela is a unique revelation of the Vedic tradition toward theology. And the concept of Leela is that God covers his divinity so as to intensify the reciprocation of love between him and his devotees. You know, just as a billionaire may sometimes act in a drama as a pauper so that there can be reciprocation between him and his relatives when they have assembled for a family get-together. And the billionaire may say that, oh, from 3 days I have not eaten anything. Please give me something to eat. So, similarly, now actually he may have eaten 3 times on the same day, but he says this because he wants to demonstrate, have reciprocation of love by demonstrating that emotion. It is not that he is just acting like that. He actually feels that way at that time. So, God is omnipotent. Just as this person is a billionaire and will never have shortage of food, God is omnipotent. It is never that he lacks power. But when he comes in this world, he acts in a way appropriate for the relationship, and he doesn't always exhibit his omnipotence. So here, when Krishna had just become angry like this, so Arjuna also realized at that. So normally, just as the stars in the sky, but the light of those stars is covered by the sun's brightness. Similarly, for the intimate devotees of the Lord, they are the knowledge of the Lord's divinity is there, but that knowledge is like stars, and it gets covered at times because of the brightness of the sun. But sometimes that knowledge also becomes apparent. So Arjuna is sometimes aware and sometimes not aware, and he almost knows, but in the forefront of his consciousness and in the dealings with Krishna, most of the times it is fraternal relationship, and occasionally it is the devotee-lord relationship. So here, in the Mahabharata, the first time that Arjuna starts offering prayers to Krishna, and he starts pacifying him, and then Krishna slowly becomes pacified, and then Krishna turns to Yudhishthira, and he says, O king, if I had been there, I would never have let the gambling match to take place. I would have spoken strongly and ensured that this disaster never happened, but unfortunately I was engaged elsewhere, and so I could not be there. As soon as I heard about what has happened, I have come immediately. Yudhishthira was intrigued and he asked Krishna. He wanted something to take his mind off the anxiety also. And He asked, "Oh Krishna, where were you?" So Krishna told about how a terrible demon named Shalya had attacked the city of Dwarka, thinking that Krishna was there. And actually Krishna had been in Hastinapur for the Rajasuya sacrifice, and then he had left immediately. And when he had, on getting the news that there was attack, and he had gone there, and that demon had got great mystic powers, and it caused a lot of trouble and devastation in Dwarka. But Krishna went and killed that demon, and he was restoring the city at that time. And then as soon as he got the news of the Pandavas' misfortune, he immediately rushed back. Now, significantly, in this conversation, Krishna doesn't act like an omnipotent God, saying that I can be present everywhere, and he could have been here also as well as there also. No, when Krishna performs Leela, the whole purpose of Leela is that he covers his divinity. And by covering his divinity, he relishes the relationships with others as if he is just one of them. So when Krishna comes to this world, he acts as a, almost like a human being. Sometimes he may manifest his divinity. So here the Pandavas don't mention that Krishna, it is you who arranged for Draupadi's robes to become endless. That was definitely a miracle, and that happened by Krishna's grace, as the great commentators in the Mahabharata and the great devotee scholars have explained to us. But in the Mahabharata's narrative itself, the focus is on the Leela. And in this, the Pandavas, when they suffer like this, what is it demonstrating? Yudhishthira commits a mistake, a terrible mistake. How can a king like him gamble? We discussed the circumstances that the gambling happened because he was compelled to do so. You know, he had no, that there are compulsions and there are motivations. Motivations mean sometimes we have a desire to do something and gain something by that. Compulsions means that external circumstances push us to do certain things. So Yudhishthira had no desire to gamble. He had no motivation, but there was compulsion. And that compulsion was that a Kshatriya, when challenged, cannot refuse. And that he had taken he was normally expected to obey his elders, and that he also had to, he had specifically taken a vow also to obey his elders. So in this way, Yudhishthira did such a ended up doing such a terrible thing. And after that, Krishna intervened, but then that had no effect on the participants, and their brazenness continued. And Krishna did not mention this, that I came to protect you in this way. So Draupadi told Krishna, "Krishna, how is it that when I had 5 powerful husbands that I was insulted in this way?" Krishna pacified her and told her that, "Oh Draupadi, do not worry. In this world, virtue will eventually be rewarded. You will become the queen of great kings, and you will be celebrated in the whole world. Have patience." And Draupadi begged Krishna, "Krishna, I deserve your protection because of our relationship, our friendship, because of our of the regard that you have for me, and because of the regard I have for you as my lord." So what was the relationship? Actually, all the kings at those times would have multiple relationships. Somewhere, someone would be married with somebody else. But here, Draupadi had a direct relationship through, in many ways. Actually, Draupada and Yadu dynasty were also related earlier. And now, after Arjuna and Krishna were related through Kunti. Kunti was Krishna's aunt, so they were cousins. And Draupadi was Krishna's, in one sense, relative that way. They were friends also. Krishna would visit Draupada's kingdom to meet the kings, and that time he would meet Draupadi also. And that's why the Pandavas had attended their the Swayamvar of Draupadi also. The Yadavas had also attended, but they knew that Draupadi was meant for Arjuna, and that's why they did not participate in the Swayamvar. And then Draupadi also called out to Krishna. She knew he was her lord. So Krishna said, you will surely be protected. And then Krishna and Balaram talked and they said, now that Yudhishthir, you've given the word to stay for 13 years, you'll have to stay. And at the end, the Pandavas must be given their kingdom back. If they're not given the kingdom, then surely war will result. And then Krishna and Balaram told them that, you know, stay in the association of sages and increase your virtue during this time. As Yudhishthir was preparing to depart deeper into the forest, the sages headed by Shaunaka came to him and they consoled him and they said that, O king, do not lament over the loss of wealth. In this world, wealth causes great bondage and suffering. It is, do not have desires for wealth, because attachment destroys a person, just as a single spark within the hollow of a wood can destroy the whole tree. The sages told that 1,000 causes of grief and 100 causes of fear overwhelm the ignorant at every moment, but the wise are never overcome by such things. Remember the wisdom of the Vedas and stay calm. Yudhishthir was thoughtful and he said, I do not desire wealth for my own purposes. I want to serve the Brahmanas. What is the use of a householder's life? He cannot take care of his dependents. How will I be able to do my dharma as a householder without wealth? So Shaunaka said that actually there are multiple duties and a householder can maintain others and the householder can focus entirely on dharmic activities. It is better to never have touched mud than to have touched it and then to cleanse oneself. Even when one wants to engage the things of this world for the service of God, for the purpose of dharma, still there is the possibility of getting entangled and attached. So you have already attained success in your dharma as a householder and as a king by performing the Rajasu Yajna. Now, focus on perfecting the dharma of renunciation as you have been circumstantially put in that situation. Yudhishthir nodded and thanked the sages. So dharma is guhya. This is a theme which will come again and again. Bhishma mentions it twice while talking with, responding to Draupadi's question in the assembly. And Yudhishthir had a similar conversation about artha in the assembly hall of Mayada, which Mayadana had built, and Narad Muni had come there. So when Narad Muni came to meet the Pandavas, he asked them, he said that in the householder life, there are three duties, dharma, artha and kama. Dharma is the performance of religious activity, in the yajna, dana, tapa. These activities are meant to create a heart of virtue and help us live righteously in this life and ultimately be promoted to an auspicious destination in the next life. Artha is financial prosperity. We need resources in this world to be able to live respectably. And kama is the fulfillment of desire. We have various desires and they are meant to be fulfilled in a gradual way. So Narad Muni told that, O king, happy is that person who does not, in the pursuit of dharma, neglect artha and kama, or in the pursuit of artha, neglect dharma and kama, or in the pursuit of kama, neglect dharma and artha, which happens frequently. Happy is that person who balances all these three things. So, the pursuit of kama, neglecting dharma and artha, means that a person just thinks that I'll enjoy this, I'll enjoy that, I will enjoy that. And such a person doesn't think about the future, even in material, well, in terms of material well-being. People, when they earn and they spend and then they use credit card, they use loans and they get a mountain of debt. And then people who are reasonably well off then become paupers, debtors and miserable in a short time. So even from the material point of view, if one just fulfills kama and neglects artha, then one will be miserable. And such people hardly ever think of dharma. So to pursue only kama, which without considering artha and dharma, that is what often happens to impulsive, passionate people. The urge to splurge, spend, 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 do not think. You know, there are people who are called shopaholics. Shop, 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 and waste a lot of money. But then there are people who focus only on artha. Just earn, earn, earn. They are misers. They have huge amount of wealth, and they just pursue wealth so unidimensionally. Often they become workaholics, just thinking how much money I have in my bank account. And they don't have time for their family. They don't have time for their family members. They have no time for God. And their life becomes very unidimensional, and they're also miserable. And those who are in householder life, they cannot just in the name of religiosity, dharma, neglect their family members, neglect their family financial responsibilities, and just do only religious activities. If that's what they want to do, then the householder order is not the right order for them. The different order. If somebody is in the householder order, then the balance of all three is required. But still, what will be a balance of all three? How much should one pursue artha? How much should one seek after karma? And how much should one focus on sulun dharma? That will vary depending on person to person. This balance between dharma, artha and karma will have a far greater percentage of dharma for the brahmanas. And it will be relatively, the artha and karma concerns will be much more for the kshatriyas than they are for the brahmanas. So that will vary according to person to person. So Yudhishthira was told over here that dharma is guhya. Earlier, for the purpose of getting rajasuya, doing the rajasuya sacrifice, you accumulated artha in his unparalleled terms. You are the wealthiest of the kings. And now that artha has gone away from you. But still, you can continue on. And you can focus now on dharma. Circumstantially, you have been put in this situation. Accept it. And pursue your duty accordingly. And then, Yudhishthir, contemplating thus, turned towards his priest, Dhaumya, and he said, "The Brahmins have been following me despite my request to them to go back to the kingdom. I must do something to maintain the Brahmins. I cannot abandon them." So Yudhishthir was so responsible that he was thinking that even when I don't have the facility, still I will do the responsibility. Now often whenever we want to do something, we first think, what will I get? I need this, then I will do this. So we demand facilities, then we will execute responsibilities. But Yudhishthir, you know, I will find out how to get the facilities, but I want to do my responsibility. Instead of thinking that how will I maintain myself, what will I eat in the forest, he was thinking how will I maintain the Brahmins. So at that time, Dhaumya thought deeply and he said that long ago when there was shortage, at that time, Surya, he raised the water up and he brought down rains, and through that grains came. And that is how it happens all times. So Surya is the source of food, and therefore pray to him and he will provide you food. So nodding gravely, Yudhishthira entered into the water, and Dhaumya gave him the 108 names of Surya and several other prayers to please and invoke Surya Dev. And Yudhishthira started praying fervently to Surya Dev, and he stood with his hands upraised in a yogic posture, doing pranayam, and he abstained from food and water for several days. And Surya Dev was pleased by the intense austerity of Yudhishthira, and he descended and he gave him a shining plate, and he said, "This plate will be such that food in it will never get exhausted. As for all day, as long as Draupadi has not eaten, the food will remain. And whatever is put on it, even if it is served out, immediately it will reappear. And in this way, this will enable you to feed any number of brahmanas." This is called as Akshay Patra. Patra is a vessel. Akshay, Kshaya is that which gets deteriorated or destroyed or consumed. And Akshay, that which doesn't end. So in this way, Yudhishthir, even when he had nothing, through the power of his austerity, he acquired an extraordinary facility, the like of which even Duryodhana did not have. And he continued his service to the Brahmins. And as he went deep into the forest, Markandeya Rishi met him. And many great sages had come to meet him and give him their good wishes. And they knew that he was a virtuous king. And he was also a great devotee of the Supreme Lord. So Yudhishthir would spend time talking with them, and he would feel great joy in their association. And actually, he was more Brahmanically inclined, and he felt satisfied talking with the sages. And he saw Markandeya Rishi was smiling on seeing Yudhishthir, and Yudhishthir was intrigued, and he said, "So many sages have come, and they have all expressed sorrow at my misfortune. How is it, O great sage Markandeya, that you are smiling at my misfortune?" So Markandeya Rishi smiled further, and he said, "O king, I am not smiling at your misfortune. I am smiling thinking of how similar your condition is to that of Ram. He was also virtuous, and yet by a conspiracy he was banished, and he had to suffer greatly. But eventually he also regained the kingdom and gained glory back. So stay patient, O king, and you will also regain glory." So in the Mahabharata itself, there's a narration of the Ramayana in a abbreviated form that is called as the Ram Upakhyan, the description of the story of Ram. And in this way, the Pandavas showed by their own example how one could be absorbed in spiritual subject matters and go beyond one's material circumstances. So Yudhishthir was absorbed in this way, but Draupadi, however, was not satisfied. Her heart burned thinking of the humiliation that she had undergone, and seeing her husbands, who were meant to be kings, now living so austerely, she could tolerate it no more. One day she approached Yudhishthir and she said, "How is it, O king, that you stay passively after the insults that all of us have suffered? Is it not our duty to retaliate against these insults by punishing those who have caused this great suffering to us? You are a Kshatriya, and it's the duty of Kshatriya to take action. How can you sit passively over here?" As Kunti spoke, Bhima also joined. Bhima had been fuming. He would sit alone and cast out heavy breaths, longing for a time to display his prowess. And he also supported Draupadi. And so Yudhishthir at that time spoke. He said, "O Draupadi, anger leads to no good in this world. Things that are done in anger, they make things worse. Whatever is a problem, an angry response makes the problems much, much worse. If the anger creates a problem bigger than the problem that it intended to solve, one should never give in to anger. Forgiveness is the supreme virtue. For in forgiveness, one attains peace. One attains satisfaction." Draupadi was not satisfied. "O king, I also know dharma. There is a time to forgive and there is a time to punish. And a king who does not understand the difference between the two times, such a king is doomed." Bhima also spoke. "O king, how can we sit passively when we have been insulted like this? Let us march back to the kingdom and let us regain the kingdom, destroying all the Pandavas. What was lost in gambling from you, let us get it back. And let us regain glory." Yudhishthir did not feel angry. He calmed down and he spoke. "O Bhima, I understand your feelings. But do you not remember that I have given my word? I will stay 12 years in the forest and 1 year in exile. How can I go back against my words?" And he said, "I should have controlled myself more. I got carried away in the spell of gambling and let myself lose everything. Alas, what a great misery I have caused in all of you. I am alone responsible for this. But still, I cannot forsake virtue. I must honor my word." See, Yudhishthir so humbly admit that he had got carried away under the influence of gambling. Bhima and Draupadi became silent. And then they spoke again. "O king, there is a higher virtue and there is a lower virtue. When we have been insulted so grievously, the virtue maintaining one's own word is a small virtue. Cast aside this virtue and follow the higher virtue of punishing those who are wicked. That is also a Kshatriya's duty. Do not delay. Seeing that Yudhishthir was not ready to hear, Bhima finally said that, if you are worried about staying in the forest, he said that, think about how we will stay incognito. It will be impossible and again we will have to go to the forest. And there will be no end to this. Better that we will go back. Actually, by this time, 12 months had passed in the Papandava's forest stay. So he said, in some circumstances, 1 month is like 1 year. So now 12 months are like, let the 12 months be like 12 years and let us go back and fight and gain our kingdom back. So Bhima was very angry. And then Yudhishthira still stayed calm and he said, oh Bhima, do you think that if we go and fight, is victory guaranteed? But Yudhishthira was firm in his understanding of the philosophy. He had committed a mistake and he was going to bear the consequences of that. He said that whatever has happened upon us is by our past karma. But now we should not do further bad karma. If we have taken our word, given our word that we will stay in the forest, then we must stay in the forest. What will happen in the future, that will be something which will be decided at that time. But what is our duty now? For Yudhishthira was clear about that. And then, but when Bhima was not ready to listen, in the language of duty, then Yudhishthira talked in the language of practicality. He said that now we are unarmed, we have no weapons. Do you think that we will be able to win against Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Ashwatthama, Kripa, Duryodhana, Dushasana and the whole Kaurava army? We need to strengthen ourselves by performing austerities, by gaining celestial weapons. And when we do strengthen ourselves thus, then if we do not get the kingdom back by peaceful means, then we may consider war. But at present, we'll have to bide our time. And Yudhishthira spoke gently and pacified Bhima. So here, Yudhishthira's focus is extraordinary. In this world, many wrongs may happen to one, but one has to consider what is the right thing to do. We see Yudhishthira's righteousness in so many ways. His refusal to get angry with Dhritarashtra and the Kuru elders. His refusal to bite back, to cause them suffering indirectly by creating dissension among the citizens. He did not tell the citizens, yes, you come with me. No, he told the citizens, go back and respect the king. And he also did not get inflamed, angered by the goading of Draupadi or Bhima. He stayed calm and focused. And as the Pandavas were passing their time in the forest like this, Vyasadev came there. He called Yudhishthira aside and he told him that for eventually there will be a great battle and you must prepare. For that Arjuna must perform austerities and gain celestial weapons. He will even have to go to the heavens for that purpose. So Yudhishthir, I will teach you the Pratismriti mantras. By these mantras one can travel very fast over long distances. And using these mantras, Arjuna can go to the Himalayas and from there he can go to the heavens. So he gave the Pratismriti mantras to Yudhishthir. And after some time, Yudhishthir knew that as soon as Arjuna would get the mantras, he would leave them. And he did not want to be separated from his brother. But knowing that that was the only way they would be prepared for the eventual war, he gave the Pratismriti mantras to Arjuna and blessed him, initiated him in those mantras and blessed him to go towards the heavens. Arjuna embraced all the other Pandavas and Draupadi was further grief-struck. Arjuna was the favorite among the Pandavas, was her favorite, and she could not tolerate the thought of separation from him. She said, oh, go, O King, and go, O Arjuna, and come back. May you be successful. May you come back soon. The sufferings in the forest are themselves difficult, but all the more so will be your separation. We'll think of you all the time and pray for your success. And Arjuna departed. That time, Lomasha Rishi, he came there, and he told the Pandavas that long ago, when there was a conflict between the I have seen in the past that sometimes the asuras become successful. But even when they become successful, they neglect dharma. And when they fall to impiety, they become weak. The devatas, they stick to dharma and they gain power and they eventually overpower the asuras. So, now, O Yudhishthir, even when you have lost wealth, focus on doing austerities and getting religious merit. Visit the holy places. And in this way, you will be able to gain piety in preparation for the future. And the Pandavas also decided to go to various holy places, traveling far and wide. And as they went towards Badrika Ashram, towards the Himalayas, the very austere places, so Yudhishthira told most of the Brahmins, he said, the journey from here is very austere. Those of you who will not be able to perform these austerities, you can go back to the kingdoms of Drupada and other kingdoms. And there, those kings will maintain you. Thank you for your association. And Yudhishthira started going deep into the forest, through hilly areas. So Yudhishthira told Bhima, you should take care of Draupadi constantly. And Bhima would practically carry Draupadi through most of the reasons. And Draupadi, being unable to tolerate the austerity, one time fell unconscious. Yudhishthira started lamenting what to do at that. He turned towards Bhima and Bhima suggested that call Ghatotkach. He's a night ranger. He can go through the mountains at great speed. And he took them at great speed to over long distances. And the Pandavas in this way reached the sacred areas in the Himalayas. Lomashushit pointed them out to the Gandhamadan mountain and told them, you can go and stay over there. Because that is where Arjuna, when he completes his stay in heaven, he will return from there. In this way, Yudhishthir stayed in the path of virtue and inspired his brothers to also acquire dharmic merits by traveling to holy places, by associating with saintly people and hearing spiritual wisdom from them. In this way, Dharmaraj forever stayed on the path of dharma even when the Raj was taken away from him. We'll continue in our next session. Thank you. Hare Krishna.